Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC Fight Night 82 event, which takes place in Las Vegas, Nevada. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, our premium package bets for UFC on Fox 18 went 1-1 to profit 0.5 units overall. We won our bet on Alexander Yakovlev, but Dustin Ortiz killed our parlay with Randy Brown. We also won our 0.5 unit free bet on Brian Barberina at plus 275 odds. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 82 features a 12 fight card in total and will be aired on Fox Sports 1 and UFC Fight Pass this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a featherweight contest between Artem Lobov, who is 12-11-1 with one no contest, taking on Alex White, who is 10-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in White, minus 150, the comeback on Lobov, plus 110. Looking over at our sponsor right now, fivedimes.eu, it's currently Lobov, minus 140. The comeback on White is plus 120. So line has flipped, and more action has come in on Lobov. Tough fight. I mean, White's been out for a while. He's making his return, and he's one of these guys that's definitely a well-rounded fighter, a guy that has some skill everywhere and is a threat everywhere, really. And Lobov is another one of these guys. If you're just looking at his record on paper, I mean, he's about a 500 type of fighter. I believe his official record is like 12-11, 11-11 in some sites. So he's about a 500 fighter. Now, he got a good reputation overseas fighting. I mean, he's better than his record currently indicates. He always has been. He's fought decent level competition throughout his career, but also the Ultimate Fighter now. I mean, since he made it to the finals of the Ultimate Fighter, and he was actually favored to win the Ultimate Fighter as well, he's gaining some respect because he is one of those guys that always brings it. He has a ton of knockout power to go along with some submission skill, some wrestling skill. He's just a well-rounded guy overall, but again, he's beatable, and he's probably getting a little bit too much respect, I think, in this spot, because I think he does have the power. He does have enough to get White out of there as well. But the way these guys match up, honestly, I think the better mixed martial artist is actually White. And White's going to be a little bit longer. He's going to have, I believe, 5-6 inches of pure reach. Both these guys are southpaw, so that makes things a little bit interesting as well. But what it comes down to for me is I think that if Lobov can't get White out of there, I think White probably wins on the scorecards. I think White is a better submission threat on the ground. I think Lobov is okay. I mean, his sub defense, even though he's been subbed a couple times in his career, isn't too bad. I mean, obviously, even a guy like Ryan Hall in his last fight wasn't able to get rid of him. So Lobov has definitely improved in all areas, but I still think White, you got to give the slight advantage in wrestling. You have the slight advantage, I mean, in pure jiu-jitsu, and then on the feet, even though you probably give Lobov a small advantage, I mean, White has some power to go along with it too. So in my opinion, White's just a little bit better than Lobov right now. So I'm going to go against the grain and pick him to win this fight. Not real confident though, because one thing that bothers me here in this fight is White's defense is a little bit suspect. He does get tagged. He has been knocked out already in the UFC as well. So I wouldn't be shocked if Lobov clips him along the way and knocks him out. But overall, I got to stick with my gut and my head. And it tells me that White is the better fighter, and I'm going to pick him to win.
This fight will come down to whether it's technical or a brawl. If it's a brawl, I feel it favors Lobov. He is giving up 5 inches in reach. He's clearly the smaller fighter, even though he's dropping down to the featherweight division. White's 3 inches taller as well. And honestly, Alex White, if he's capable of fighting long, he's going to be in a good position here. He has decent boxing fundamentals and kickboxing fundamentals, and he proved that in his UFC debut with an impressive first-round knockout of Esteban Payán. But for the most part, Alex White's biggest issue is how hittable he is. He stands and trades. He got knocked out in his second UFC performance, and then his last bout against Clay Collard, which was over a year ago, he just got outworked. And, you know, Collard just had a little bit more heart in him. And I think what's going to happen here is White might start pretty strong, but he does fade a little bit down the stretch, and Lobov packs some serious heat in his punches. Now, Lobov's record is not very intimidating at 12-11, but most of his losses have been due to his opponent having a superior ground game. That's always been an issue with Lobov. He's been submitted. He's been wrestled. He got controlled in his UFC debut, the finale against Ryan Hall. But that's really not part of Alex White's game. So if Alex White tries to turn this into a brawl, then White's chin being a little bit questionable is going to be very suspect here. And if Lobov connects with his power, then he's definitely going to be in a position to finish this fight standing. Lobov was knocking out lightweights on The Ultimate Fighter, and he could definitely knock out a featherweight, even though he's given up some size. So what White needs to do is pump the jab, work his kicks, stay on the outside as much as possible. Do not let Lobov step into the pocket. And if he does, he needs to be working his footwork, just dance out of there. So this fight definitely could go either way, but I actually think that Artem Lobov is going to be motivated to go in there and take care of business, especially with Alex White having been out of action for over a year. So I'm going to side with Artem Lobov. Next up is a welterweight contest featuring Mickey Gall, who is 1-0, and Mike Jackson, who is 0-0, making his professional mixed martial arts debut. Now, Nick, what's the oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Gall, minus 475, the comeback on Jackson, plus 325. Right now it's Gall, minus 600, and the comeback on Jackson is plus 450. And just a little while ago, it was around the 500 mark. So more action continues to come in on Gall. Not surprised here. I mean, look at the matchup. Obviously, the winner of this fight, I shouldn't say the winner, Gall, if he wins this fight against Jackson, he gets a shot at CM Punk. And that's kind of why this matchup was made a little bit. So obviously, we know who most people are rooting for, who the UFC probably prefers to win this fight. It's Gall. I mean, he does have a little bit of hype around him. He's only 1-0. I mean, these guys, honestly, you can't get a very accurate read on either one of these guys because it's so early on in their career, and both of them have had some amateur experience, so you got to base a lot of that stuff on there. I mean, going back and looking at some footage as well. But when it comes down to Gall, I mean, he does have a really good jiu-jitsu game, and that's what really highlights his overall MMA game. He's a brown belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. He trains with the likes of the Miller brothers. He's even has spent some time in American Top Team as well. So he's training in good atmosphere, good environment. Gall on the feet, he's not awful, I guess, for more of a ground fighter. He's getting better, but he's still really raw. You could tell that he's not really that comfortable there. But what he does do well is actually use his stand-up game to close the distance and look for takedowns. And once he gets it on the floor, I have to admit, from what I've seen, he is pretty slick. I mean, the guy's more than capable of going out there and finishing fighters in the welterweight division underground. So that's what he's going to look to do. I mean, he is a grappling-based fighter, so he's not going to play around, I don't think, with Jackson on the feet. He's going to look to take this down and look to submit Jackson. That's why you're seeing him such a high favorite here. Because Jackson, on the other hand, is your complete opposite. He's more of your striking-based fighter, boxing, kickboxing experience. He's not bad. I mean, he does have a 4-6 amateur record, so he's got kind of a losing amateur record overall. That's not really a good thing. He's been finished a few times by KO and one time by sub as an amateur, as far as I know. And then he's been decisioned 4 times as well. So looking at the way he fights, Jackson does have a little bit of speed. He's got a little bit of power on the feet. He's not bad. But at the same time, for being more of a striker, I just don't like the way he holds his hands. His hands are a little low. His chin's a little high as well. So even against another great striker, I think he could be in trouble. But here he should have the advantage over Gall on the feet. It's just, will he be able to keep it there? I don't think he will. I think what's going to happen here is Jackson's going to come out looking to sprawl and brawl a little bit. Gall will eventually get this fight to the floor and will submit him. So that's what the matchup's about. Again, that's why you're seeing such a high line. I could be wrong because again, it's not anything you can have an extreme amount of confidence in, but I think that's pretty much how it plays out. So Gall by submission is what I think is going to happen, and he will move on to face CM Punk at some point here. And other than that, just be careful if you're betting this fight either way, because how can you seriously have much confidence in either guy?
This is far from the typical UFC fight. I mean, obviously both of these guys have a long way to go before they would have typically been considered to be fighting in the UFC, but opportunity presented itself and Mickey Gall took it. So I will give him full credit. He was on that Looking for a Fight show. He won his professional debut, and then he asked Dana White if he could fight CM Punk. And you know what? They're like, okay, we'll give you a chance. So basically, this is the Mickey Gall tryout on a national scale. And Mike Jackson, he's a guy that is being brought in because he has a little bit of experience. He hasn't fought professionally either. So combined, these guys are 1-0 in their professional mixed martial arts careers. And if Mickey Gall wins, he fights CM Punk. And Mike Jackson, if you look at him, he is a bit of a personality in the Legacy promotion. He does a lot of video, behind-the-scenes media stuff. He has fought for them as an amateur, and he is also has a bit of a kickboxing background. I haven't seen much in terms of his ground game, and that is where this fight is likely going to be taking place, so that is a concern. But on the feet, Jackson has a loose style, very relaxed, good flow, and he has some power. So if he's able to somehow keep this fight standing, he's going to have a chance, but that's very unlikely. Mickey Gall is 24 years old. He's been training in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu since he was 16, so he's got 8 years of experience. He is a really solid grappler overall, very experienced in that department, and especially for a fighter that's just 1-0 as a professional. So what I expect is going to happen here is Gall's going to press forward, close the distance, get this fight to the floor, and then just look for a way to finish it by submission. And if that doesn't happen, maybe Jackson can knock him out, but I highly, highly doubt it. UFC wants this Gall kid to win. They want to set up a fight to make a CM Punk, make that fight a bigger deal. And if Mickey Gall wins, that's exactly what the UFC wants. So I'm going to side with Mickey Gall here. Now moving over to Fox Sports 1 for the preliminary card, we have a featherweight contest between Noad Lahat, who is 9-1, and Diego Rivas, who is 6-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Lahat -350, the comeback on Rivas +250. And right now, looking over five dimes, Lahat -325, Rivas is +265. So a little bit more action, actually. Lines have tightened up, but a little bit more action coming in on Lahat right now. Early action came in on Rivas. So this is kind of going back and forth a little bit as far as the betting window goes, because Lahat at anything over 3-1, typically at this point of his UFC career, is a little bit of a head scratcher, but the styles make fights, and this matchup does definitely favor Lahat. And I'm saying that because Lahat, I mean, in his debut, he got just derailed. He got floored, obviously, by that crazy knee that Pepe threw. But after that, he's put together some impressive wins. I mean, back-to-back wins over Seiler and Backstrom. You got to give Lahat some credit for those wins. Those are very solid wins. And I think here against Rivas, it's actually a step down in competition for him. So he is getting fed a winnable fight and one that he should win. That's why you're seeing him as kind of a higher number here. But there's still some question marks around Lahat. One of it is obviously his cardio. He does tend to slow down a little bit. And the other obviously has to be said with his chin. I mean, he's got a suspect chin. And in my opinion, Rivas, however you want to say it, his best chance to win this fight is actually landing and knocking Lahat out. He is a tough Latin America participant. He lost to Benitez by sub in the opening round there. And then in his official UFC debut, he won a unanimous decision over Rubio. So that was okay, but still, I think this is a bigger step up in competition for Rivas. And I think that even though he does have a well-rounded skill set, he's really not great anywhere. That's the problem for Rivas here as well. But he does have a little bit of striking, and he does have some aggression to go along with it. So if he clips you, he could definitely follow up and put your lights out. So Lahat definitely has to be careful in that area. But on the ground, even though Rivas does have some wrestling and he likes to take the fight to the floor from time to time, he makes so many mistakes on the ground that Lahat is just going to – he should have a field day here. He should end up in top position. He should be looking for submissions, and I think he probably does find one along the way. So to me – both of these guys are well-rounded. They have all parts of their games, but Lahat is definitely a lot better on the ground, and that's where he's going to exploit Rivas. So I think what it comes down to is Lahat probably finishing. At what point does he finish along the way? But he does end up getting the submission, I think. If not, he's going to probably end up just wrestling him and winning a clear decision as well. So Rivas only shot KO. I don't think he gets it here, and I think Lahat comes away with a win.
This fight is a tremendous mismatch. Noad Lahat just has superior grappling. He's a accomplished wrestler, and he's been able to take his opponents down repeatedly in his last few fights and avoid any submission trouble. And Rivas is actually a fighter that primarily wants to take it to the ground as well. And that speaks very badly for him, because I think, honestly, as Nick mentioned, the only way Rivas wins is by knockout, and he doesn't really pack that much power either. Rivas does have a bit of a decent counter right hook that he can connect with. He can throw a head kick if need be, but they aren't big weapons. He does not throw with very high volume. So it would really just have to be one of those one-off shots that catches Lahat coming in. And I just don't think the likelihood is there. Lahat is decent on the feet, but his biggest strength is definitely on the ground. You saw that with his win over Steven Seiler, especially, just completely took Seiler out of his game and put him on his back and won a decision. And I think that's what happens here, except I don't think Lahat wins a decision. I think he actually finishes Rivas on the ground, whether it be ground and pound or submission. Rivas, as much as he likes going to the ground, and you saw that in his UFC debut win, his big issue is he's very sloppy there. He leaves a lot of openings. He does not have good hip pressure, so he gives up position repeatedly when he is in a good spot. And he just leaves a lot of holes for his opponents to exploit on the canvas. And if Rivas had faced a better ground fighter in his UFC debut, I think he would have either lost or at least he would have at least lost a decision. If not, been submitted. So what Lahat's probably going to do is get this fight to the ground quickly, take advantage of Rivas's mistakes on the canvas as he tries to scramble, get a dominant position, and then look for the submission. So that's probably what's going to happen, and that's why I know Lahat's my pick. Now dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Ray Borg, who is 9-1, taking on Justin Scoggins, who is 10-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Borg, minus 270, the comeback on Scoggins, plus 190. Right now, over at Five Dimes, it is Borg minus 335. The comeback on Scoggins is plus 275. So Borg has been bet up. And this was a difficult line to set, to be honest with you, because these are two of the best young flyweights, in my opinion, that the UFC has on roster. I mean, both – it's almost a shame that one of these guys has to lose. And it's tricky because of, I mean, the attributes these guys bring to the table. Scoggins is one of the best strikers in a flyweight division. His wrestling obviously has gotten a lot better. I mean, he's been working on it. You could tell he actually goes for, he's a striker that actually goes for takedowns and is successful against other grapplers and other wrestlers. Now here in this spot though, against Borg, he has to be careful because even though Borg is a very complete, well-rounded fighter, he's just a beast everywhere the fight takes place. His best attribute is obviously on the ground. And he's not your typical ground fighter. He's not your typical wrestler. I mean, Borg can be put on his back. He can be controlled a little bit. But at some point, he ends up scrambling out of the bad position and ends up getting top position. And then once he gets in his comfort zone, he really is aggressive with the submission game. And not many people can survive against him. So Scoggins is fighting a very different fighter here. I mean, somebody that you really can't prepare for. I mean, that's how good Borg is on the ground. And that's why the line has been getting bet up a little bit. But at this point, honestly, plus 275 on a guy like Scoggins, I think is a little ridiculous. Even though most of us agree that Borg, his ground game, it should be too much for Scoggins. I just think maybe we're underestimating Scoggins in this spot here. Now, as far as a pure pick goes, I have to side with Borg. I mean, there's no question about it because the guy could even make it close and competitive on the feet. He's no slouch there at all. But on a ground, I mean, in a three-round fight, you would think eventually he finds a way to get Scoggins back or get him in a choke and make life miserable for him. So this is definitely a tough fight, even though I lean towards Borg. I don't know. I mean, if Scoggins comes in here with the right game plan and is able to sprawl and brawl and keep it upright and not spend too much time on the ground, he can win this fight. So it is a dog or pass situation. Scoggins could very well be a live dog in this spot. But as far as pure pick goes, you got to trust what we've seen out there. And Borg's just on another level than most flyweights out there. So I got to pick Borg. It's just, it's not, I guess, as confident as the line currently indicates, but I am picking him to win the fight. And he probably wins it by sub if he does.
One of the things that was most intriguing about Justin Scoggins before he made his UFC debut was his dynamic striking game, especially his kicks. And we have not seen it yet, surprisingly. For the most part, Scoggins has used his wrestling and his ground game and scrambling ability to win fights. And it's actually been unfortunate for him because he's actually picked up a couple losses because of that. Now, one thing that is definitely going to be against Scoggins here is that Ray Borg, the ground is his world. I mean, this kid wants you to go to the ground. So if Justin Scoggins shoots in for a takedown, Ray Borg is going to be licking his chops. Scoggins should have an advantage on the feet here, so perhaps he's wised up a little bit and will try to utilize it because Borg is one of the best ground fighters in the entire flyweight division. I mean, the only people right now that I could rank potentially above him are Formiga and Mighty Mouse. I think anybody else, Ray Borg can probably grapple circles around him. And Justin Scoggins, as dynamic as his striking game is, I think it's going to be difficult for him to utilize it because he needs a lot of space to use those kicks. And Ray Borg is probably going to be putting a lot of pressure on him. Borg has underrated striking. We haven't seen a lot of it yet because for the most part, he does what he does best, which is get fights to the floor and then work for submissions. And he's been able to do that twice so far in the UFC. He's been able to win a decision most recently against Herrera with his grappling. And the thing to consider is Scoggins, in his stoppage loss, he actually was submitted via guillotine choke from John Moraga. And I can tell you right now, I think Ray Borg has just as good of a guillotine choke as Moraga, if not better. They both lost competitive decisions to Dustin Ortiz that they probably should have won. But regardless, this fight, while it's close, I just feel that as long as Scoggins continues his trend of taking fights to the floor, I think Ray Borg is going to be making some sweeps, transitions, getting onto Scoggins' back, and then either working for submissions or just trying to ride it out and win a decision from dominant positions. Really, the only way realistically for me that Justin Scoggins can win this fight is either somehow he's able to utilize his wrestling and stay in top position, which I think is going to be extremely difficult, or if he can keep his space on the feet and outstrike Borg while avoiding all attempts to get the fight to the floor. And I think that is also going to be very difficult. So while I don't think the betting lines are correct, I think it should be a little bit closer. I think you have to favor Ray Borg, so I'm going to pick him. Now moving up to the heavyweight division, we have Derek Lewis, who is 13-4 with one no contest, taking on Damian Grabowski, who is 20-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open this fight exactly pick 'em. Lewis -120 and Grabowski -120 as well. Right now, looking over the line, it's Grabowski -145. The comeback on Lewis is +125. So more action, more support coming in Grabowski's way. I'm not really that surprised. I mean, if you're looking at pure skill set, there's no doubt about it. Grabowski is the better mixed martial artist. He has a little bit of stand up, a little bit of power to go along with a really superior ground game. I mean, the guy has a really good, solid jiu-jitsu game. He knows how to finish a fight on the ground. He's got good ground and pound as well. He looks to take the fight to the floor, has decent wrestling. I mean, in all areas. In all aspects of the game, Grabowski is a little bit more technical than Lewis. And if you look back at Grabowski, even though he's making his official UFC debut here, he does have experience at Bellator. He had a winning record in Bellator. I mean, his only loss really was against Conrad, which Conrad at that point was basically Bellator's champion. And I mean, he was the guy that could take the fight to the floor, out-wrestle most people, and give people fits. And so you can kind of excuse him for that loss, because Lewis isn't going to have the wrestling pedigree that Conrad obviously has in this fight as well. And outside of that, Grabowski in the European scene, I mean, he's done really well. He's fought decent competition and he's performed pretty solid. But here against Lewis, I think it's going to be a very difficult fight for him. Honestly, I mean, Lewis, even though he doesn't have like the most technical skill set, the guy has never been subbed in his career, which is shocking. I mean, I know that stylistically, he's matched up with fighters that really sometimes don't have that dominant ground game. So this is probably going to be one of the biggest submission threats for him in this fight against Grabowski here. But overall, I mean, he manages somehow, some way, even if you do take Lewis down, he gets up off the ground. He scrambles out of a bad position, gets on top. And if he's on top of you on the ground, his ground and pound is nasty. He's got a ton of power. I mean, so the guy's a threat. Definitely on the ground, firm top position. He's hard to kind of keep down and control on the ground as well. And then on the feet, he's not, again, the most technical striker. He's not the fastest striker either. His defense isn't the greatest, but man, he hits like a truck. He does have a lot of power, and he's got that killer instinct as well. And he's one of these guys that continues to push a high pace. He's going to probably want to throw Grabowski up against a cage, work his dirty boxing, his clinch work a little bit as well, and just start unloading on him. And maybe, like I said, get on top on the ground and start pounding. So Lewis is not going to be an easy out, even though Grabowski is the more talented, more technical fighter here. And I've kind of been going back and forth on this fight myself because my head tells me, I mean, I should probably pick Grabowski because he is, again, the more complete technical fighter. But some reason, I think it's going to be a very tough matchup, but hard debut for him. I think he's not going to be able to control Lewis like he wants. And I think Lewis, along the way, probably finds a way to pull this fight out, even if it's a really close, crazy decision on the scorecards, which, I mean, simply if this fight goes up to the cards, I will be very surprised. But Lewis also has that capability of knocking him out. So I'm going to pick Lewis, honestly. I'm going to go against the grain, and I'm going to stick to what I think is going to be one of Grabowski's toughest tests in a while, and I think Lewis might come away with another victory, which would be impressive. I mean, Lewis, for not having the most technical skill set, he's getting the job done. I mean, he only really has a couple losses in the UFC this far at this point, and they've both been by knockout. Maybe Grabowski can get it done, but other than that, I mean, Lewis is the one doing the knocking out in most cases. So I'm going to pick the Black Beast to come away with a win here.
Honestly, this fight is actually very similar to Derek Lewis's last fight against Victor Pesta, except Pesta, in my opinion, is a little bit less technical than Grabowski, and he is also younger. But for the most part, it's a similar matchup, and Derek Lewis still has the same issues in that Lewis still is not very particularly fast on the feet. He doesn't have great defense standing or on the ground, and he's not particularly a great grappler. What happened in the last fight was Pesta just gassed and then ate some huge shots, and then Lewis was able to turn it up late and get a third round finish. This time around, I think Damian Grabowski will probably not gas, although UFC jitters are a thing. He is making his UFC debut, but for the most part, Grabowski is just a really solid technical ground fighter. He's not a tremendous wrestler, so Lewis does have that going for him. Grabowski will have his work cut out for him in terms of trying to get this fight to the floor, but if he does, he should be in tremendous shape. Now, Lewis does not have a great chin either, so if he does get put on his back, I could see Grabowski getting a TKO win on the ground. Now, Lewis has fight-changing power, so if he can connect, if he can somehow get on top of Grabowski, which could happen because Grabowski has pulled guard at times to try to get fights to the floor, and if he pulls guard and can't get out from under Lewis, he could get TKO'd there. And while Lewis is not a great striker standing, he did connect with a huge shot against Pesta in his last fight standing, which really surprised me, actually. So it could happen again. Grabowski is not a world beater on the feet, but he's not bad. He's just a little stiff, which you can expect for someone 35 years old that has not been the most proficient striker throughout his career. Now, another thing to keep mind of is that Derek Lewis will have about 20 pounds on Grabowski, even though Lewis should have some physical advantages in terms of his height and reach. So Grabowski, he needs to get this fight to the floor most likely, or in the clinch, but primarily to the floor. But if he does, he has a very good submission game. He has pretty good hip pressure. He has decent top control, and he could definitely hurt Lewis on the canvas or submit him. So I think this fight's close. I just feel that Grabowski is a little bit better than Victor Pesta, and Pesta was a round and a half dismantling Lewis for the most part with top control and grappling. So I'm going to side with Damian Grabowski. I'm not insanely confident with it, but I think the pole can pull this one off. Now dropping down to the lightweight division for the main event of the preliminary card, we have Josh Berkman, who is 28-12 with one no contest, taking on KJ Noon, who is 12-7 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Berkman -135 to come back on Noon's -105. And right now, action has been coming in a little bit more steady on Berkman. It's all the way up to Berkman -170. The comeback on Noon's is +150 at the moment. We'll see some action back and forth, I'm sure. And we might even see the line drop a little bit, but we could see an increase as well. I mean, stylistically, if you look at it, it's Berkman. First of all, we got to say he's dropping to 155 for the first time in his career. So that's going to be interesting, especially considering, I mean, Berkman, in my opinion, outside of the UFC, when he made his little run to get back into the UFC, looked great. I mean, you could tell he's been putting in the work. I mean, the guy has everything that you want in a mixed martial artist in a lot of ways, because he's got the knockout power on the feet. He's got good wrestling to go along with it, and he's a finisher on the ground as far as the submission skill goes, offensively at least. So offensively, he's definitely a handful for anybody. He was at welterweight. He will be now at lightweight as well. But the problem is, so far in his UFC career, I mean, he's looked like he is kind of a little bit on a decline. I mean, he starts gassing. Now, of course, he's had some really hard competition. I mean, top-notch competition to deal with here thus far in the UFC with Lombard, Kim, and even Cote. You got to give Cote some respect the way he's been fighting recently as well. So he hasn't had easy fights, but in those fights, I mean, he's starting to fade a little bit quicker. I mean, he's starting to gas a little bit more. He's starting to absorb a little bit more punishment as the fight goes on. And to me, it's just not sitting right. I mean, you don't know what Berkman you're going to get in round two and round three, and especially against a guy that could put his hands on you like Nunes can. So this is a difficult fight to pick, because Berkman will have the wrestling edge. Like I said, he always has that ability to end the fight with one punch. or grab your neck and choke you out. So Berkman a threat everywhere, but I think Nunes has actually been working pretty hard and he's improved his career along the way as well, because obviously he came from the striking background. He's got really good boxing. He's got power to go along with it, but he's been putting in the work and he's made himself a very complete mixed martial artist as well. You're not going to see him go out and sub anybody, but his takedown defense has significantly improved. I know in his last fight, he got submitted by Oliveira, but before he got submitted, Oliveira had to take the fight to the ground because, I mean, it wasn't looking that good at all. In that spot, Nunes was actually doing fairly well in the stand-up game there, which isn't really a shocker, I guess, because that's what he does best. But overall, I mean, you can tell that Nunes is not the easiest guy to take down. He's been working on that wrestling, and then when he can keep the fight in his realm, he does really well. So I think that's what he's going to do here. He's going to be able to sprawl and brawl. If Berkman doesn't take his back or follow the game plan Oliveira did, obviously, or start kind of panicking a little bit and having to take the fight to the floor, could finish it there. But I don't think it's going to be easy. I think the matchup with Oliveira is a little bit different. I think Berkman's going to struggle to take this fight to the ground a little bit more, and especially in round two and round three. And then you factor in the weight cut for the first time. There's a lot of question marks surrounding Berkman in this spot. And I think Nunes, again, putting in the work, even though he is not a young buck in his own right at age 33, and he's had so many fights throughout his career as well, I still lean a little bit more towards Nunes. I think he's fresher. I think right now you're going to get to see a better Nunes than we're used to seeing, actually. And the way he matches up with Berkman, he can sprawl and brawl and make this a very interesting fight. I think he can win this fight on the scorecards. I think there's a possibility that he could catch Berkman along the way as well. Berkman has a pretty solid chin. It's not the easiest. He's not the easiest guy to knock out, but I mean, with the kind of knockout power the Nunes has, I wouldn't be shocked if that happens along the way either. So for me, even though the public and all the action is coming in on Berkman, I'm actually going to go against the grain here as well. I think the Nunes just matches up relatively well with Berkman. It's going to be a competitive back and forth fight. So I'm going to think, and I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Nunes here. I think he gets the W.
Josh Berkman versus KJ Nunes is a very interesting fight between two solid veterans. And the fact that it's taking place at lightweight is perhaps the most intriguing part about it. I mean, Berkman is getting up there a bit in years, and now he decides to finally drop down to the lightweight division. That's usually not a healthy choice for a fighter, especially as they're nearing the end of their careers. I mean, Berkman's had over 40 professional fights, and every single one of them, as far as I know, has been welterweight or bigger. So dropping down to the lightweight division, even though he probably has the physical tools to drop down, like size-wise, in terms of height and reach and everything, because him and Nunes have almost the exact same statistics in terms of their physical abilities. So maybe it's something he should have done a long time ago if he really wanted it to work. But right now it just feels like a desperation move, especially because he's had some competitive fights. His fight against Lombard was a fun scrap, even though he lost it, turned into a no contest. His fight against Donghyun Kim, he had Kim hurt multiple times and then just kept going for takedowns and allowing Kim to get superior position on him. And then his last fight, him and Patrick Cote had an absolute war, and Berkman just ended up being on the receiving end of his first career knockout loss. And, I mean, they both got their licks in. So it's not like Berkman wasn't competitive in the welterweight division. It wasn't like he was getting physically dominated by fighters. So I think this definitely is more of a desperation-type move. And KJ Nunes is somebody you shouldn't sleep on. If Berkman and Nunes trade standing for the whole fight, Nunes probably wins. Nunes is the better technical striker. I mean, we all know he's a former boxer and he has good boxing overall ability, and you know, he was able to beat Nick Diaz the first time they fought because of opening up some big cuts on him. And the guy clearly can go out there and take care of business if it's kept standing. And he does have some underrated power that we're finally starting to see a little bit. Berkman has power too, so I mean, we could see either of these guys go down, although Nunes has done a good job of recovering quickly if he does get hurt. So I think it's unlikely that we see a finish standing in this fight. And Berkman should have an edge if it goes to the ground. Berkman's wrestling is okay. His ground game is excellent. So if he can get Nunes on the ground, then he's going to be in a decent position. That being said, Nunes' takedown defense has gotten a little bit better, although his submission defense is still not great. I mean, you saw that in the Alex Oliveira loss. So honestly, I think this fight's close standing. Noon should get the better of it, and Berkman should have a huge edge on the ground, and maybe he actually uses it this time. For some reason, his fight IQ has been so bad. I mean, repeatedly looking to take it to the ground against Dong Hyun Kim, and maybe he actually uses that same Dong Hyun Kim strategy against Noons because it would actually work. But I don't know. I got a bad feeling that he wanted to take Dong Hyun Kim down, and now he's going to just want to stand and bang with KJ Noons. But as long as Josh Berkman's weight cut is good, then he should be in a decent position to go out there, get this fight to the floor, and either submit Noons or ride out a decision on the ground. But if he does not have a good weight cut, if he gasses badly, I can see Noons, you know, just popping him over and over again and eventually potentially getting a TKO win or just winning a decision maybe the last two rounds. So in the end, I'm just going to side with Josh Berkman here. Now, kicking off the main card on Fox Sports 1, we have Mike Pyle, who is 26-11-1, taking on Sean Spencer, who is 12-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Spencer -160, the comeback on Pyle +120. Right now, looking over five times, it is Spencer -175. The comeback is +155 on Pyle, and the line just recently moved, so a little bit more action coming in Spencer's way, but there has been some two-way action on this fight as well. And it is kind of a difficult fight to pick. I mean, if you're looking at, again, skill set for skill set, Pyle has obviously throughout his career displayed that he is a very complete fighter, a very game fighter. I mean, he's fought the best of the best, and he's done relatively well against most of them. And he's one of these guys that even with age, he could still pull off a great win. And now I'm saying even with age because he is 40 years old coming into this fight, and he's facing a much younger guy in Spencer at age 28 as well. But still, for a 40-year-old, I mean, Pyle, honestly, I think mentally he looks a little bit more relaxed out there. I think the mental issues early on in his career in some of the bigger fights kind of hindered him, but now he's kind of gotten over that with experience, with time. And then as far as skill set goes, I mean, the guy doesn't have bad striking. I mean, he's really not known for striking too much, but he's definitely serviceable on the feet. I mean, he has a little bit of power. He's got some good clinch game with his knees, and he can hit you with some elbows as well. So overall, Mike Pyle has a little bit of power. He has the ability to finish you on the feet, even though that's not his real thing. Obviously, his best attribute is on the ground. He's got decent wrestling. In fact, underrated wrestling at times. And then on the ground, his submission game is off the hook in most cases, I should say. So Pyle is a very dangerous and complete fighter, and he's a hard fighter to kind of match up with and deal with a little bit. But we can't ignore the fact that he is 40 years old. His chin is not getting any better. I mean, he's been knocked out throughout his career five times. So that always sits in the back of my mind, especially going against a young gun that honestly is kind of the opposite here. Even though Spencer doesn't have a whole lot of knockouts on his resume, he does have a little bit of underrated power. He's got the speed advantage here in his fight, and he is primarily a striker. So his takedown defense is to the point where it's gotten better, and it's gotten good enough that in most cases he could keep the fight upright, but he does get put on his back. He does get taken down at times as well. So that's going to be the dangerous part about this fight. Can he maintain upright against a pretty solid grappler like Pyle? If he can, he's going to go ahead and cruise and either win a clear decision on the scorecards, or he's going to probably knock Pyle out along the way. So you do have your kind of striker versus grappler matchup here, even though, again, they're both a little bit more well-rounded than that. And I'm going to favor the young guy here. I mean, I think that Spencer does have the ability in most cases to keep the fight upright, and I think he sprawls and brawls and actually outpoints Pyle and along the way probably catches that chin and knocks him out. So I'm going to lean with the favorite here and Spencer. I think this is going to be a really solid win for him. I mean, throughout his career so far in the UFC, they haven't done him really many favors. I mean, Spencer's been matched up with relatively skilled fighters. In most cases, I mean, very hard outs. But if you look at his last fight against Pender, that's definitely a fight that he should have won. So he got kind of shafted on the scorecards there. Not a lot of people were surprised, though. I mean, the judging these days is ridiculous at times. So that should be a win for him. I mean, and that was probably his easiest fight thus far in his UFC career, to be honest with you, how they matched him up. So I think the guy is improving. He's got a decent upside, and if he continues to get better, he could be a threat, and he could be a player at welterweight. I don't know how high he can go as far as a title contention or anything goes. I think he could be more of your typical gatekeeper, but he is definitely a threat on the feet. He can outpoint most, and I think he does that here against Pyle.
And Sean Spencer has proven that he's definitely worthy of being in the UFC welterweight division. He's pretty rock solid overall. He has a good striking pace. He's accurate. He doesn't have a ton of pure punching power, but for the most part, he's active, throws at a decent volume, and he can get the job done on the feet. He can, for the most part, win decisions. using a really good overall point fighting type of style, and it's been extremely effective so far. It didn't work for him in his last fight, but as Nick mentioned, that was pretty much a highway robbery against Pendrit. Now, Mike Pyle, on the other hand, is still very dangerous. As 40 years old, but just like a wild animal backed into a corner, they are still extremely capable of violence. And Mike Pyle has a ton of power, so if Sean Spencer's not careful, he could be eating a huge shot and get put out. Mike Pyle could knock out just about anybody. Now, in terms of the ground game, Spencer, for the most part, is a sprawling brawler. He would much rather keep this fight standing and just try to pick apart Mike Pyle on the feet. Pyle, on the other hand, is a pretty good overall wrestler, and he was the grappling coach, or one of the jiu-jitsu coaches over at Extreme Couture, and he still has those excellent ground skills. So if this fight goes to the floor, then Pyle could get himself in some trouble, or then Spencer could get himself in some trouble. So Spencer's going to have to avoid Pyle's attempts to get takedowns, and he just needs to circle away, continue marking up Pyle's space with jabs and the occasional combination, and I see Spencer pointing his way to victory. So I definitely am going with Sean Spencer here. Now moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Misha Sirkunov, who is 10-2, taking on Alex Nicholson, who is 6-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Sirkunov -705 to come back on Nicholson, +435. And I thought that would probably be enough to keep people away. But right now, over at Five Dimes, it is currently Sirkunov -1,000. The comeback on Nicholson is +650. So it was not enough to keep him away. And considering, I mean, hey, Sirkunov, if you're just looking blindly at records, 10-2 versus 6-1, you think Nicholson has a shot. And he might in a small way here because, I mean, he does have a little bit of power and his unorthodox striking could play into this as well, but I doubt that happens. And Sirkunov is a favorite for a reason, a huge favorite for a reason as well. Nicholson, really, his background, he doesn't train really with a lot of great fighters. I mean, he's a trainer at the UFC gym in Florida. He does need some serious work. I mean, he has a little bit of everything, but at the same time, he's so raw and everything. I mean, his best attribute is the stand-up game, but he seems a little bit uncomfortable standing as well. So that's the weird part about it. Now, he does mix in some okay boxing with some decent amount of kicks. I mean, he loves to throw kicks, and he does have his best attribute to me in his stand-up game is his clinch work, because he does like to just kind of grab your head and throw some bombs as far as knees go to the body, to the head. So he is very dangerous in that regard. And he also likes to spin and throw some unorthodox techniques. So he's kind of a wild, aggressive striker that doesn't have the most technical skill set. So that does make him kind of dangerous. But the problem here is, I mean, Sirkunov is just on another level. He's faced much better competition throughout his career. Nicholson can be put on his back, and that's exactly what Sirkunov's going to do. I mean, he specializes on the ground. Sirkunov's, I mean, he's not bad everywhere the fight takes place, but make no mistake, he's not going to want to stand and bang with Nicholson, even though I think, honestly, with Nicholson's defense, Sirkunov, even though he's not known for his striking, can actually hang in there if he doesn't get caught with anything crazy. I think still Sirkunov knows he's going to want to take this fight to the ground. Once on a floor, I mean, it's going to be a wrap fairly quick. I mean, Sirkunov is a very intelligent fighter. He's going to know he needs to get in position and probably take his back or, you know, get superior position, get a guillotine choke, something. He's going to end up finishing this fight on the ground, maybe grab an arm or whatnot. So there's a clear path to victory for Sirkunov here. That's why the betting line is so high. And as far as a mismatch goes, I mean, it's just Nicholson's not ready for an experienced grappler like Sirkunov here. I think the only chance he really has in this fight is to land something unorthodox and just kind of like a puncher's chance, if that. So Sirkunov definitely has this fight. It's his fight to win, and I think he will probably win this. I mean, this would be realistically a pretty big upset. And Sirkunov, starting his UFC career 2-0, I mean, he does have a pretty good upside, and I think he can go a long way at 205. So we'll see how far he can make it, but it's definitely his fight to win or lose, and he's going to win this fight.
Yeah, there's not much more to say. This fight on paper seems extremely one-sided. Nicholson is a decent overall striker. He has some power, and he could, if there's any chance to victory whatsoever for him, it's his spinning back fists. He can hit them in open space. He can hit them moving forward. He can hit them while backing up. He actually knocked out an opponent getting backed up towards the ropes with the spinning back fist. So Sirkunov is going to have to keep his hands up, but if he does that, then this fight's over. Nicholson does not have a great ground game. He does not have great takedown defense. He cannot scramble very well. And when put on his back, I don't think his submission defense is very good. So Surkunov is an excellent athlete and perhaps the best grappler in the entire light heavyweight division. So what I see happening in this fight is Nicholson maybe throws a couple punches. Surkunov closes the distance, gets a hold of him, drags him to the floor, and this fight ends by submission in the first round, most likely. So I have to favor Misha Surkunov, and in a big way. So I'm picking Surkunov. Now dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Zach Makovsky, who is 19-6, taking on Joseph Benavidez, who is 23-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Benavidez minus 400, the comeback on Makovsky plus 280. Right now, looking over the line of five dimes, Benavidez minus 470, the comeback on Makovsky is plus 375. So another spot where they are betting Benavidez up a little bit. Not really that surprised. I figured the action might come in his way. But the line's getting a little wacky right now. I'm expecting, honestly, a pretty competitive fight. I do lean Benavidez because if you look at how they match up, I mean, both these guys are extremely skilled and talented in all areas of the game. Benavidez obviously hits a little bit harder. He's got that more one-punch knockout power for sure than Makovsky does. Makovsky, I think, is the more well-rounded striker of the two, though. He can mix things up a little bit better, more of diversity in his striking game. But I still think Benavidez is going to be the one landing the harder shots along the way. Now, the wrestling is going to be interesting as well. You got to give the edge to Benavidez on the ground as far as getting top position possibly. But Makovsky's ground game is no joke. I mean, he can scramble out of bad spots. He can basically get in top position as well from that. And then obviously the threat of his submission game is always going to be there. Now, sub defense, it's going to be hard to sub Benavidez because, I mean, the guy's never been subbed for a reason. He's a very intelligent fighter. So it's going to be hard for Makovsky to catch him in a sub. And then on the other hand, Makovsky has been subbed, even though offensively he is pretty slick on the ground. He has been subbed a few times along the way. And we all know how Benavidez loves to get that guillotine choke in. So you never know. I mean, even though Makovsky, I think they neutralize each other out on the ground here, and we don't see a guy get subbed either way here. But with the power and technique that Benavidez has with that choke, it's possible here. So I do give the edge here to Benavidez. Again, he's the more powerful puncher on the feet. I think he's going to be just a tad bit faster. I think he'll control the tempo of the fight and the pace of the fight and probably edge out a very competitive decision. I think the line is a little bit too high. So those of you guys that are going nuts and thinking that it's a sure win for Benavidez and putting him in parlays and all that, just be careful because, I mean, even against Dotson, everybody kind of thought the same thing and counted Makovsky completely out in that fight. But he did show up and he made that fight a lot more competitive. Regardless of the situation, Makovsky, I think, is going to do the same thing here. He'll be competitive. He's going to be game. He knows what he's going to have to deal with. I mean, you're fighting the number two, arguably. You know, I know the rankings are out there and they might say different, but you're fighting the second best flyweight in the world. And if you beat this guy, you do get a shot at the title, pretty much, I think. So a very important fight for Makovsky, where Benavidez, he's kind of in that spot where, you know, they could keep feeding him realistic contenders, but he's probably not going to get a shot at Mighty Mouse anytime soon again. So interesting spot. Be careful out there the way you bet it. I'm going to lean towards Benavidez as my official pick, but I'm hoping we see another competitive matchup because, I mean, it should be a fun fight.
This is definitely a fun matchup, but it still feels to me like they're just trying to keep Joseph Benavidez busy since he's out of the title picture. Now, Zach Makovsky is a good fighter. He has proven himself so far in the flyweight division with some pretty solid wins, but I'm not quite sure he's on Benavidez's level. Benavidez is quicker. He's the better athlete. He has more pure punching power. And I think Benavidez is just as dangerous, if not more dangerous, with his submissions. Now, Makovsky does have a pretty good grappling game in his own right, especially some solid overall wrestling. We did see Benavidez get taken down by Tim Elliott, and Zach Makovsky put a wrestling clinic on Tim Elliott. So potentially, Zach Makovsky could have a wrestling edge here. We don't know yet for sure, but if Makovsky's aggressive enough with the takedowns, he might be able to get some solid positioning against Benavidez. Another thing to look out for is, while Makovsky isn't the greatest striker, he has improved drastically. He's been doing some great training overall since he kind of switched things up, moving from Philadelphia over to the TriStar gym. And that actually really improved his jabs and his left hook. And he's actually been able to do some damage with those strikes now. So Benavidez, well, he's the deserved favorite. He should keep his guard up here. But for the most part, I see this fight playing out a bit similar to how Benavidez beat Ali Bagautinov in his last fight. Benavidez was just a little bit quicker, a little bit more active, and was just able to get in and get out without getting hit as much, and was able to win a decision. It wasn't the prettiest performance or the most fun fight to watch, but it was effective. And that's probably what happens here. I don't see Makovsky getting finished, most likely, but I see Benavidez walking away with a decision just based on being a little bit more active. Even if Makovsky has a little bit better fundamentals in a couple areas, unless Makovsky utilizes his wrestling and is somehow able to get Benavidez off his feet, I see him losing a decision. So my pick is going to be Joseph Benavidez. Now moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Ovin St. Preux, who is 18-7, taking on Rafael Cavalcante, who is 12-6 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open OSP -380, the comeback on Cavalcante +260. Right now, St. Preux is -440. The comeback on Cavalcante is +350. So it has been bet up a little bit. A lot of people are throwing OSP in parlays as well. I mean, I don't blame you here, to be honest with you. I mean, I think Ovin St. Preux has really, out of the two fighters, I mean, they're going in two different, entirely different directions here. OSP is the guy that's consistently been getting better. They've been kind of stepping up his competition along the way, and he's performed relatively well. I mean, if you think about it, I know it's a Shogun that is kind of past his prime at this point as well, but he's got a win over Shogun, which is very impressive. I mean, and then he also recently defeated a great wrestler in Patrick Cummings, even though he's a little still raw and developing in MMA, Cummings is. I mean, you gotta love the way he was able to fend off those takedowns, or even if he did get put on his back for a second, get right back up and scramble out and then do what he does best, and that's knock people out. I mean, St. Preux is obviously one of the most dangerous and hardest punchers and strikers, I should say, kicks as well, at 205. So Cavalcante has been knocked out four times in his career, and he's facing one of the hardest hitters he's faced in a while in this spot as well. So I don't think it's going to bode too well for him, honestly, even though Cavalcante has, again, if you want to look at technical skill set, the guy has a ton of power on the feet. I mean, in his prime, he could knock out most people. I mean, he's got that kind of special knockout power to go along with a great and underrated and unknown, really, in most cases, a submission game. I mean, he's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. He's capable of finishing the fight on the ground. His wrestling's actually not bad either. He's the type of fighter that's hard to control. I know, again, you could say in his last fight that he did get taken down. He did get controlled a little bit, but he is, again, as I mentioned, declining along the way. So this isn't the same Cavalcante that was in his prime that would give fighters fits. I think this is a spot where OSP could seriously come in here and put another highlight reel type of finish on his resume here against a very legit kind of former shell of himself in Cavalcante. I know that might not be fair to say. Maybe we see Cavalcante show back up here with a little bit more energy and a little bit more like his old self, but I doubt we see that. I mean, it's basically OSP on the rise, and Cavalcante is kind of, I think, a step or two out the door as far as UFC goes, especially with another loss here. So it's OSP's fight to win or lose. I think he does win this fight. He has to be careful, though, because Cavalcante does have knockout power, especially in round one. He's going to have to be a little bit more careful. But outside of that, I think OSP probably finishes Cavalcante along the way. He's just going to be too hard to deal with. So I think the high line here at -400 or so, or over 400, is justified. And I'm going to pick him to win.
Yeah, at one point, Feijão Cavalcante was one of the most dangerous and feared light heavyweights around. But that was a long time ago. That was a steroid suspension ago. I mean, the guy just has been a shell of himself, really, since returning from that. And he wasn't without flaw before then, either. Cavalcante has some power on the feet. He has a little bit of submission ability. He does have a decent guillotine choke. And that's about it for me. He's not particularly fast. He doesn't have the greatest defensive ground game or guard. So what I see happening here is Ovin St. Preux just being a little bit quicker, a little bit more powerful, and just having that extra explosion should be able to get in, land on Cavalcante, and get out of the way without getting hurt. Plus, the fact that St. Preux has a nasty left hand should be to his advantage. You know, Cavalcante, even though he has worked with Black House, trains in Brazil, has worked with Lyoto Machida, he still is going to have some difficulty dealing with some of the speed that St. Preux brings. Now, St. Preux is not perfect either. He does get outworked by more technical fighters with really good wrestling, people like Ryan Bader or Glover Teixeira, who were able to get him onto the ground and take away his weapons, wear him out. But against fighters that don't quite have that technical level, he is able to get things going. I mean, Patrick Cummins is a wrestler too, but he was just so focused on it that St. Preux was able to kind of scramble back up and then clock him and put him out. And St. Preux definitely has that one punch ability. I mean, you saw it against Shogun. I mean, it wasn't even that big of a shot, and he just clipped Shogun almost backing up and put him out. So you have to really be impressed with what Aubin St. Preux is able to do out there. And I think his power and explosion are going to be the big difference makers here. And I don't see Cavalcante presenting nearly enough threat to get the win. So I'm siding with Aubin St. Preux. I think he probably wins by knockout, most likely in the first round. Now moving up to the heavyweight division, we have Roy Nelson, who is 21-12, taking on Jared Rosholt, who is 14-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Nelson minus 145, the comeback on Rosholt plus 105, and right now the line has gotten a little bit worse. It is Nelson minus 160, Rosholt is plus 140, so more support coming in Nelson's way. Another difficult line to set, I mean, because if you're looking at it, you're talking about two guys going in two different directions as well. Rosholt coming off the biggest win of his career. I mean, a very impressive win over Struve. He did exactly what he had to do. Surprised me a little bit as well. I mean, as far as how he performed in that fight. So you got to give the guy credit. He's getting more confidence. He's getting more experience. He's getting better. Nelson, on the other hand, even though you could say he had a respectable performance against Josh Barnett, I mean, he went five rounds, and we all know that Nelson tends to gas as the fight goes on as well. The guy cannot win decisions. I mean, it's been lightweight throughout his UFC career. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, he hasn't ever won a UFC decision in his life. So it's just one of those cases that after the first round, Nelson does tend to slow down. Now, again, he's improving on that a little bit, but I mean, he's most dangerous in the first round, and he's going to have that puncher's chance, no doubt about it, throughout this fight as well, especially in round one over Rosholt, considering that the way these guys match up here. I mean, Nelson, even though he doesn't have a huge diverse striking attack, I mean, I think Nelson has enough power, obviously, to clip Rosholt along the way and put him out. I mean, Rosholt has been clipped. He's been knocked out before. He has been rocked in fights that he's recovered with, and then come back and won. So he has a suspect chin. And against a guy like Nelson's power, I understand why people are betting it, because Nelson should have the wrestling to keep this fight upright. And upright, he should have the advantage, because even though Rosholt, I think, can his striking is improving, and he could throw a little bit more effectively at times, or could be stay a little bit busier. I think that still Nelson, definitely you got to give the stand-up edge to him. I mean, with the experience, with everything he's got going for him, and with that crazy knockout power that he has. And combining that with a pretty solid chin on Nelson, and with, like I just mentioned, Rosholt's chin issues right now, I mean, it should be a KO for Nelson. But I just think Rosholt's going to implement a pretty good game plan here. I know Nelson is not the easiest guy to take down, but I think if anybody could do it here and game plan properly and find his spots to do it, it would be Rosholt. I think also on the feet, I mean, Nelson does slow down enough that even though Rosholt is not the better striker here, I think he can be a little bit more consistent in the pace that he pushes. And if you, this fight does somehow hit the scorecards, I know a lot of people are not expecting it really to go that far. I mean, you got to kind of lean Rosholt. I mean, Nelson seriously has not won a fight in the UFC. And there's a reason for that, because his activity level slows down to the point where, you know, he doesn't do as much as you'd like him to do. So there's a reason he doesn't win decisions. So I think Rosholt, if he can manage to stay awake long enough and not get clipped and knocked out, he probably wins his fight. I think he can win on the scorecards. I think he can repeatedly along the way start looking for takedowns. It might not be easy right away, but along the way he could repeatedly get some takedowns and maybe get top position. Then once on top, I mean, Rosholt is definitely a hard guy to shake off you and get top position. Now, as far as jiu-jitsu goes, I mean, you do have to give the edge to Nelson on the ground as well. But the sad thing is for Nelson, we don't get to see him implement his BJJ that often at all. So he is more of a striker in the UFC. He's been more of a striker in the UFC, and I don't see that changing at all. So Nelson has a decent ground game, but I mean, you put him on his back and you stay cautious. I mean, it's not like he's going to be throwing up arm bars and triangles left and right here. So Rosholt can get position. He can do some damage on the ground, and I think he can probably pull off this upset. So really, I give Nelson what you almost always give him, a puncher's chance to win this fight. But outside of that, that's why I'm going to actually lean against the grain here, and I'm going to pick Rosholt to win. I think if he can survive and get knocked out, he's got more ways to win this fight. So I'm going to go with him to pull off the upset.
And I agree. Roy Nelson is 39 years old, and honestly, he does not outstrike people. He either knocks them out or he loses. That's pretty much been his MO his entire mixed martial arts career, especially in the UFC. Now, Nelson does have a decent ground game, but we just never see it. For the most part, he either tries to land that big looping overhand right, maybe he throws an uppercut, but that's about it. And if he does not connect with those, then he's going to lose a decision. Jared Rosholt has the ability to be a little bit more technical than Nelson on the feet. He's not a bad striker. It's just, for the most part, Jared Rosholt prefers to get inside, smother his opponents, clinch, get the takedown, and then get on top. And he has very good hip pressure, very good top position. So what I see happening here is Roy Nelson's going to flail away with those big bombs. And if they connect, he'll put Jared Rosholt out cold and he will win. But if they don't, then he's going to leave himself exposed. Rosholt will have openings to either unload some combinations on the feet or, more likely, close the distance, get Nelson on his back, and keep him there. Now, Nelson does have a decent Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu game, but again, he is not very effective off of his back. It's more from when he's in top position where he can be a little controlling. He can land some shots on the from above. Maybe he can go for submissions. Maybe he can wrap up his opponent and, you know, pitter-patter him with ground and pound. But when he's put on his back, he is not that effective. You saw that in the Frank Mir fight. And I think Jared Rosholt has better top control than Frank Mir. So if Rosholt's able to take Nelson off of his feet, then he's going to be in good position here. Now, it's not the prettiest to watch. It's not the most entertaining fight. But when Jared Rosholt is at his best, people are booing. And that's what he wants to hear probably when he's in the cage. So unless Roy Nelson knocks him out, which could happen, Rosholt has been knocked out twice before, but unless Roy Nelson knocks him out, then Jared Rosholt is going to get inside, get Nelson on his back, and ride out a decision. So I'm actually siding with the underdog here as well. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a welterweight contest between Johnny Hendricks, who is 17-3, taking on Stephen Thompson, who is 11-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Hendricks minus 385, the comeback on Thompson plus 265. That line has since disappeared, and it was set really high, and too high, obviously, because right now it's Hendricks minus 210. The comeback on Thompson is plus 175. So more action. I mean, this fight has been up for a long time, so more action has kind of steady come in on Thompson, dropping the line where it is now. A little surprising. I mean, if you look at it, Hendricks is the type of guy that honestly, arguably, could still be wearing that heavyweight strap. The welterweight strap, I should say. I mean, he was really competitive even in that last fight that went to Lawler. And then outside of that, I mean, Hendricks is, again, has the confidence. He's got everything going for him right now. He knows he's top of the food chain type of fighter. He knows that he's championship worthy. And Thompson is kind of one of these guys that's been working his way up the ladder, and he's been performing well. He's been getting better and better, but this is his first real shot at getting in the title picture or getting in the title mix. And a way he can do that is obviously by picking off the former champion and the guy that's currently in line for another title shot in Hendricks. So it's your typical striker versus grappler matchup, with the exception that Hendricks has a crazy amount of knockout power going along with it. So, and his striking has gotten better. He's been in there with some pretty good strikers in his own right. So he can handle what most have to offer. But the problem with Thompson is he's so unorthodox. I mean, he's got that great karate style. He knows how to work his angles well. He's precise with his striking. You don't know if he's going to come at you with his hands or his feet. I mean, he can knock you out with either or. So Thompson is a very talented, gifted striker, and unlike anybody Hendricks has fought thus far. So that's where the hard part is going to come in for Hendricks here. I mean, if Thompson can't keep this fight upright, he can win this fight. I mean, he is the better striker, even though I think his chin at times can be suspect. He's been clipped a little bit. He's been rocked. I mean, even in the Ellenberger fight, he was dropped briefly there for a second. I mean, he got clipped. You could tell. I mean, a lot of people probably thought that Ellenberger was going to end up finishing him, but he recovered quickly and he was able to come get back into his groove and do what he does best and look spectacular in his striking end. And he had another highlight reel knockout. But that being said, I mean, there is definitely some spots to see that even though Thompson moves well, and he's not the easiest guy to hit, when he does get clipped against a guy that has a lot of power, he could definitely be in trouble. So Hendricks has that puncher's chance as well on the feet. I don't think it's going to be an easy fight for Thompson, even if he's able to keep it upright. But what it comes down to here is really Hendricks utilizing his wrestling. I mean, he is one of the better wrestlers, obviously, at 170. He's been for a long time. He knows that he's going to have to get this fight to the floor and kind of grind Thompson out. There's a lot of question marks surrounding both these fighters as far as conditioning goes. I mean, Hendricks does have a tendency to slow down. We've said it time and time again. He doesn't look the same in rounds, especially in championship rounds in rounds 4 and 5, but he's the type of fighter that can't fight tired and has that kind of no quit attitude in him. So it doesn't matter if he's tired. He's still going to be there and he's still going to be coming at you looking for takedowns, even if it is in the fifth round. So he does have that advantage. He has the advantage again overall. He's fought the better competition throughout and he does have the wrestling advantage. So he's going to look to take this fight to the floor. I think at first it's going to be difficult for him. I don't think he's going to be able to ragdoll Thompson, but as the fight goes on and progresses, his opportunities are going to be there. And I think he's going to get easier for him to get Thompson to the ground and then obviously work his game. And then for Thompson, I mean, he does have a tendency to slow down as the fight goes as well. He's gotten better with this cardio. He's gotten more experience again in the UFC. So that's changed a little bit, but now we haven't seen him tested in those championship rounds. So round 4 and round 5 is going to be really new waters for him. And I don't know how he's going to perform in that. If it goes that long, if it ends up getting to that spot. So a lot of question marks surrounding both guys here. You also got to take in consideration. I mean, Hendricks, there's been some issues with his weight cutting recently. I mean, there was even talks of him moving up to 185. He seems to be back to normal. I mean, he seems to be actually ahead of the game as far as his weight cut goes for this camp. Most of you guys have probably seen his photos out there on Twitter and, you know, they've been posted on websites or whatnot. He looks great. I mean, he's only a few pounds away and we're a couple days out, so he should be able to make weight no problem here. And that'll be good for him probably as far as his conditioning, everything, all aspects of Hendricks' game. But still, there's some question marks surrounding both these guys in some ways. So, I mean, at the original line, I can understand some dog action, but at this spot right now, I think we're going to probably see the line kind of creep back up a little bit because I'm sure there'll be some heavier Hendricks action at one point or another come back in because he does have really the championship experience and he's got some significant advantages in this fight, including, like I said, the wrestling and the pure knockout power as far as punching power goes as well. So Thompson's going to do his thing. He's going to look to sprawl, brawl, and use that striking that's really, again, unorthodox and hard to deal with against Hendricks's wrestling and his punching power as well. I think I'm going to pick Hendricks to win this fight. Even though it's dropped down to 210, I think you still got to be cautious out there and dealing with a guy like Thompson because he's one of those special athletes that continues to get better and better. You cannot ever underestimate the guy. So I wouldn't be shocked if Thompson ends up catching Hendricks along the way, knocking him out. But that being said, logic says Hendricks is the better fighter. He should be able to get the takedowns here. He should be able to grind out at least a decision win, if not find his way to a stoppage along the way as well. So I am going to pick Hendricks to win this fight.
This fight is, at least to me, very similar to Hendricks' fight against Carlos Condit. You've got Hendricks, the elite wrestler with a ton of power, taking on an extremely dangerous striker and who's long and lanky. And honestly, if Johnny Hendricks decides to just stand and bang with Stephen Thompson, he could get knocked out. Even though his chin is granite, Johnny Hendricks could get himself in trouble in just a pure stand-up contest against Stephen Thompson. But this is not a pure stand-up contest. It's mixed martial arts. And while Stephen Thompson has looked tremendous recently, especially that main event knockout over Jake Ellenberger, I mean, that was phenomenal. But I think he's going to get himself in some trouble here against Hendricks because Hendricks has that national champion level wrestling ability. And I can see Hendricks just getting Thompson off of his feet repeatedly. Now, for one thing that will benefit Thompson is I think the added 2 rounds you saw in the Condit fight, Hendricks used his wrestling for 3 rounds and he was exhausted by the 3rd round. And if that happens and Hendricks isn't able to finish Thompson, then Hendricks could get exhausted and could lose the 4th or 5th round or even get finished. So, I mean, people were saying that if that fight had been a 5-round fight, Hendricks-Condit, then Condit could have won. So that is something you have to consider. Conditioning, even though Hendricks has fought more 5-round fights than Stephen Thompson, I think conditioning probably favors Thompson. And if you look at their striking, I mean, Hendricks has the monster left hand, and that's always going to be a threat. But Thompson is so dynamic on the feet. He has spinning kicks, regular kicks, good punching power too. He knocked out Robert Whittaker with his punches, but his kicks are especially lethal. So if he gets open space, Hendricks could get himself in some trouble. But I see Hendricks consistently closing the distance on Thompson, whether it's trying to land the big left hook or he's just trying to grab a hold of Thompson and dump him on the ground. Now, I know it's been a long time since this happened, but in Thompson's one UFC defeat, he kind of ran out of steam a little bit after hitting Matt Brown a lot on the feet, and then Matt Brown got him on the ground and just started beating him up. And Johnny Hendricks just took Matt Brown down in his last fight and beat him up a lot on the ground. I mean, so that's exactly the type of game plan that Johnny Hendricks is going to employ. And I can see it working against Thompson because people really haven't been trying to take him down as much lately. So what's going to happen here is if it's kept in open space or if Hendricks gasses, then Thompson can win. But if that doesn't happen, then I see Hendricks either knocking out Thompson on the feet or just repeatedly getting takedowns and grinding this one out. Now, Thompson did get dropped in his last fight against Jake Ellenberger, and Hendricks hits just as hard as Ellenberger, if not harder. So if Hendricks connects with that left hook standing, we could see this fight end in a hurry as well, because we've seen, it hasn't happened in a while, but we've seen the power that Johnny Hendricks possesses. So Thompson is going to have to be on his guard on the feet, even in open space. So I'm siding with Johnny Hendricks. I'm a little surprised that the line movement has adjusted the way it has towards Thompson, but I guess it could be a factor of the fact that, it's due to the fact that Hendricks left team takedown in between his last two fights. So maybe that could affect Hendricks, but from what we've seen, he looks like weight is not going to be an issue this time around. So I think Johnny Hendricks shows up in tremendous shape and takes care of business. So I'm going to side with Johnny Hendricks. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 82. Part 2 of the Premium Odds Cast featuring our premium bets will be out this Friday following the UFC Fight Night 82 weigh-ins, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. Also, if you'd like to become a premium member, just go to MMAOddsbreaker.com and you can sign up in the top right corner of our homepage for either Nick's or Mike James's premium bets. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Time Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.